So we are continuing in this sermon series on the Beatitudes. And, you know, this is a sermon series where Jesus highlights the sort of people who he would consider blessed. You know, so it's kind of like, who are the good guys, according to Jesus? And what's so surprising about this list, at least I think it's surprising, is that it's not your typical list. Like, when, if we were to think, well, who is blessed in this world, in our culture, in North America, I don't think there would be any overlap between Jesus' list and the list that we would come up with. And I think that's specifically the case this morning as well, that I don't think that when we think of blessing or someone who's blessed, who has, you know, who has it all, is, you know, we don't think of the meek. We probably don't think of the meek at all, really, because we don't even use that language much. Like, when was the last time that you used meek in a positive sense that wasn't in any connection to this verse? Right? You know, that usually it's something which, you know, we would say, blessed are the bold, right? Blessed are the ones who take charge and get stuff done, right? We would say, you know, blessed are the ones who take what's theirs, who make of their life. At least that's what our culture would say, right? That those who really take charge. Jesus says, however, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And I think that really what Jesus is saying, this idea of meekness, is about yielding your ground. And I'll unpack that a little bit more. Now, when we think of meek, so, okay, let's have a little thought experiment. If you close your eyes and think of, so when you think of meek, what pops into your head? Like, in terms of our culture and all that, what image? Small, timid. Okay, what thing pops into your head, maybe? Come on, a doormat, right? That's what pops into my head, right? You know, that's what I... Anyone get doormat? Oh, okay, one person. There you go. You're my favorite. No. But, you know, a lot of times we think about the meek. We think of, well, we don't want to be meek. We don't want to be a doormat and have people walk all over us. Even if it is this nice Kempf natural Coco Koya doormat that sells for over a couple hundred bucks on the interweb or somewhere. That's where I got the image from. I learned a new word this week. Koya. Is that the bristle? Someone who knows of the doormat? Okay. So like, it's not something that we necessarily think of in a positive way. Right, we don't want to be doormats. We don't want people to walk all over us and just be kind of weak and dismissive and have people easily handle. That's not a virtue in our culture. Now, I'm Welsh, and I showed this, I think, once before, sometime in the last 8 years. Came across this on the interweb again. The meek shall inherit the earth, but the brave get Wales. So I'm about 25% Welsh, so it's not worth a whole lot. But you know, like, the point is here is that meekness is not something which is really valued in our culture. But what I want to argue this morning is that meekness is something which we should value as Christ followers. And that meekness is not weakness, right? That it's almost like a special sort of superpower or maybe a special sort of supernatural power that we get as Christ followers that helps us, especially in our relationship with God and with others. And so now when we think about this idea of meekness, part of it, some of the challenges that we have is how do we translate the Greek word? Now, I know you probably wondered that this morning already when you were, you know, doing your devotions. How would I translate praus, right? This Greek word, it doesn't occur a whole lot of times. And, you know, so that's exactly what it says. Blessed are the proud, for they will inherit the earth. Now, most translations, the majority of English translations, will translate it with meek. And that's what I think we're probably all familiar with. Now, some translations will, you know, it will highlight some of the difficulty in understanding this word. The New Living Translation says, God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the whole earth. So, okay, there's something to do with humility. The Christian Standard Bible, the gentle are blessed, for they will inherit the earth. So gentleness comes into the picture here as well. And, you know, Eugene Peterson in his Message translation, he just goes his own way. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more, no less. That's a moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. I like that. And here's the idea of contentment with who you are or what you have. So, like, all of these translations sort of try to kind of figure out how to best convey this idea that Jesus brings out when he says, blessed are the meek. Now, when you look at in the New Testament, there's a couple words. So the word that actually is in this verse, it's an adjective, praus, and it's, you know, one of the more top dictionaries of New Testament Greek. Says that it's not being overly impressed by a sense of one's self-importance, right? So it's, you know, so that's obviously related to humility. This idea that you have a good sense of yourself. You're not sort of arrogant or focused on yourself. And so that's why it's translated by gentle, humble, considerate, meek. And this actual word, it's found in this verse, in the Beatitude. But then it also is found a couple other times in Matthew, and we'll look at these a little bit later, where it's referred to in reference to Jesus. And then it occurs one other time in the New Testament. Now, Greek words have related, like there's adjectives and nouns that are all connected. So the related Greek noun is proutēs, and it, you know, so you kind of get the connection, praus, proutēs. It is this gentleness of attitude or behavior, meekness, gentleness, humility. So again, you find that some of the same words circle around these translations of these Greek words. And one thing that's significant in this is that it's often used by the Apostle Paul to talk specifically about interpersonal relationships, right? How, what our attitude or posture should be to other people. And so Paul in 1 Corinthians, where he is, they don't really like him. He likes them, but they're having some difficulties between him and the church at Corinth. And he says to them, am I to come with you with a stick? Like a stick, right? Or with love in a spirit of meekness, right? And so that's what, so he highlights it that this is how he should approach them in terms of their difficulties with each other. In Galatians 6:1, my brothers and sisters, if anyone is detected in a transgression, you who have received the Spirit should restore such a one in a spirit of meekness or gentleness, some will translate it. Take care that you yourselves are not tempted. So when we're correcting someone, when we're kind of, the meekness should be part of our posture, our character when we approach them. Ephesians 4, 2. With all humility and meekness, with patience, we should bear with one another in love. So you see again and again, it's used to talk about how as Christ followers we should be in relationship with one another. You know, Paul says to Timothy, he says that, you should correct those that disagree with you with meekness, with gentleness, with humility. And you'll find that all of these verses, when you look, if you look them up in different translations, some will have meekness, some will have gentleness, some will have humility, because these words are all kind of related. Now, this comes from the Old Testament. And so the word is based on sort of translating this word anao, which kind of refers to the afflicted, but also becomes very much used for the humble, the meek, the gentle. Right? Like this is sort of a word that, you know, in the translation of the New Testament or in the writing of the New Testament, they use these words that they knew from the Old Testament already. Because they were, of course, versed in their scripture. So this is, you can see the direct connection between the Old Testament and into the New Testament. You see that specifically in this verse, because Jesus actually, he didn't make up this beatitude. He quoted it from the Psalm 37 that we already read. What's significant here is that in the Old Testament, it was also associated with leaders. You're probably familiar with the passage from Numbers, and Moses was very meek, more than anyone else on the face of the earth. A lot of English translations will have Moses was humble, more humble than anyone else, and which is sort of ironic if he wrote that verse. I'm so humble, right? You know, but I think it's safe to say that one was maybe put in and written about Moses. But here, it's the same word in the Greek translation, you know, that Moses was meek. David in Psalm 132, O Lord, remember David in all his meekness. So, like, these verses get at something with this idea of meekness, that it is a quality that was expected of leadership. And actually, that's how it's used in classical Greece, Greek as well. Like when you look at Homer and some of those, you know, philosophers and writers, old Greek guys, that they sort of will talk about this meekness as something that should characterize a statesman or a leader, a king, governor. So, and you see that being used in a similar way in the Old Testament. When it comes to Psalm 37, as we had selections of this psalm read for us this morning already, that I think that this psalm provides the background for what, when Jesus quoted part of this psalm, you know, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth, that was from verse 11 of Psalm 37, that I think that even more than just this particular verse, some of the stuff said about who will inherit the land, right? Because that sort of language occurs four times throughout this psalm about this is the sort of person that will inherit the land, one of them being the meek. And so you look at that list, and it's those who refrain from anger, forsake wrath, and hope in Yahweh. Those are the sort of people who will inherit the earth. You also find then in verse 11, this actual, you know, the literal quotation of what Jesus said, the meek will inherit the land. And I should say that, you know, it's mostly translated, the meek will inherit the earth. It's the same word, depending on the context, whether you translate it as land or as earth. So it usually depends on the context. Are the generous, the people that will inherit the land, are the generous righteous who are blessed by Yahweh? And then finally, those who hope in Yahweh and keep to his way. That this is the sort of person that is described as inheriting the land. And I think all of these sort of qualities sort of fit with this notion of being meek. You know, having this right sense of yourself before God and before others. And also, you know, there's a sense that it was connected with moderation, with gentleness, with humility. All of these qualities that this psalm unpacks, Jesus picked up on that, you know, when he pronounces blessing on the meek. Now, in this passage, it talks about, well, they are blessed. Why? Well, because they inherit the earth. A couple of things here is that I already mentioned that the words, the translation depends on the context. In the Old Testament context, because here it's talking about, it goes back to the promise that God gave to Abraham, and that is talking about the land that God will give them. And that's repeated a number of times in Genesis 12, 15, 17, all throughout the Old Testament. Psalm 37 picks it up again as well. It talks about those that Yahweh blesses inherit the land. In the New Testament context, that gets expanded to talk about the new heavens and new earth, right? That we now look forward to heaven or the new creation, where it's beyond that. And so, you know, where the day when God's kingdom will come in its fullness. And I think what's key about this part of this beatitude, though, is that we inherit it. We don't earn it. It's given to us. It's not by merit. It's not by works, right? But rather, they are gifted the earth. In the same way that we are gifted salvation, that all of us are gifted salvation because of what Jesus Christ did for us on the cross. It's not something that we earn or that we somehow do enough stuff so then we get in. But rather, it's God's grace. And here, with this promise of inheriting the earth, that it's the meek, it's the humble, the gentle, who inherit the earth based on the grace of God. They don't aggressively conquer it or take it or make it their own, but they receive it as a gift. George Hunsinger, in his book on the Beatitudes, this is a longer quote, but I like quotes. I don't know, that's the way I am. He highlights how we inherit the earth in Jesus. It is in and through Jesus Christ that the meek shall inherit the earth. In him they are the ultimate inheritors of the promise made originally to Abraham. The promise to Abraham of the land, Genesis 12, the land that I will show you, underwent many variations throughout the history of the covenant until in Christ it became the promise of the kingdom. Moreover, the blessing given to Abraham was universal in scope. In you, all of the families of the earth shall be blessed. In Christ, this promise is that at last fulfilled for all. But only by including the one group in particular most excluded from earthly goods in this life, the meek. Universality is shown precisely by including the outcast in this promise. So, in a sense, we get in by their coattails. This segues nice to really, a point that I make about all of the Beatitudes is that Jesus is the center of the Beatitudes. He exemplifies, he embodies all of the Beatitudes, and in this particular case, Jesus exemplifies the meek. That he unpacks and sort of is an illustration, a living illustration for us of what it means to be meek, what it means to be gentle, what it means to be humble. In Matthew 11, when Jesus describes his own yoke of discipleship, right? So he uses this metaphor of a yoke that's placed on oxen to direct them. And that's a common image for discipleship in the first century. So if you were a rabbi, you would, each of your rabbis, you know, you would have different yokes, different sort of approaches to discipleship. And when he's describing his own approach to discipleship, he uses the same word. And he says, come to me, all you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. You know, my way of discipleship. Follow me is kind of what he's saying. And learn from me, for I am meek and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And so Jesus invites us to follow him, to follow his way of discipleship. And he highlights specifically that he is meek, that he is humble, gentle, and humble in heart. And it's by following his way that you will find rest for your souls. Now, part of the background of this passage is the different sort of approaches to Judaism of that day. And probably in this context, he's kind of debating a little bit with the Pharisees, where their approach to discipleship tended to be to, in order to make the law livable, they expanded it to cover every situation. And one of the challenges with that is that, well, then it became so burdensome because, okay, well, how does this law apply to this particular case? And you had to know all the different variations. Why, in contrast, Jesus came and said that, follow my way. Take my yoke upon you. And it's gentle, it's easy. His burden is light because he gets at the heart. And this is what I believe, that he gets at the heart of what God requires of us. We also see Jesus referred to with the same word of being meek on Palm Sunday, which we looked at this passage, you know, a number of weeks back, where, quoting from Zechariah, says, say to daughter Zion, see your king comes to you meek. In the Greek, it's translated with the exact same word, and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. So even when Jesus enters into Jerusalem on that Palm Sunday, and he comes in as a king, right? Everyone's waving Hosanna and all this. How does he do it? He doesn't have a gold-plated chariot that he rides in on with a big white horse. You know, he doesn't come in with a whole lot of pomp and ceremony. Rather, he comes in humble, riding on a donkey. Because that is who Jesus is. That he turns upside down the expectations of what leadership should look like, what it means to wield power in a way that's appropriate. And he calls us and he says, blessed are the meek. That's what it's all about. That's sort of why I think it's sort of the superpower, the supernatural power, because it's something that we need God for. So when we come to meek, that's why I think that it at the very heart of it, it means sort of yielding your ground. Doesn't mean being a doormat, but rather it means knowing when to yield. We do it all the time. Well, we should do it all the time when we drive, right? We have signs put up for yielding. A lot of times we ignore them to our own, you know, peril. But, you know, we yield. We know that there's certain times when we're driving that someone else has a right of way. And we need to yield. We need to slow down. We need to stop to let them go. And in life, I think following Jesus, that we also need to know when to yield to others, when to yield to God. Kennison, in his book on the Beatitudes, he says that he talks about it as the strength of character required to ground one's relationships in something other than pride and power. Stassen, in his book, says, the meek are those whose wills are surrendered to God. Right? So again, it's this idea of surrendering, having a good sense of who we are before God. Having the humility to recognize that we are sinners. that we're saved by grace, not by merit, not by works. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who we did a little mini-series on earlier this year, in his discipleship book, which actually is sort of an unpacking of the Sermon on the Mount, he says, the meek renounce all rights of their own for the sake of Jesus Christ. And I think this is the idea of yielding to others, yielding to God. And then Eklund, in her book, it's a great recent book on, I think I mentioned it in my first sermon, on the Beatitudes throughout history. And she highlights how meekness willingly yields to the other and to God, not out of weakness, but as a voluntary renunciation. And it means that you're not fighting for your rights. You're not trying to get your agenda, but yet you're willing to concede. You're willing to yield when appropriate, and especially for the sake of others, for the poor, for the needy, for the marginalized. So how do we do this? That's really a challenge. I'm not a meek fellow, right? I'm a football coach. I'm loud. I've been told I can be obnoxious. For me, this is something that is not part of my natural toolbox, to be meek and to be mild. How do we do it? Well, I think it starts with yielding our ground to God in prayer. Like, it has to start with having a right sense of what it means to be a child of God, what it means to be a follower of Jesus. That this is something that we recognize, that what we've been given, the new life that we've been given, that God has generated in us, is something that we have not earned. We have not been born into, we have not educated and earned it and been conferred as a degree, but it's by God's grace. Meekness is part of the work God will do in our lives as we live in growing submission to God, as He continually transforms us into the image of His Son, Jesus Christ, who is meek and humble in heart. I think this is what Paul's getting at, like, especially in connection with prayer, right? There's all types of prayer, all different types of prayer, and they're all appropriate. Maybe not all of them, but, you know, you get my point. But I think this idea, when Paul says, pray without ceasing, I don't think he's meaning close your eyes, bow your head, and do that all day. But he means to be in this continual relationship with God. And I think no one does this better or teaches more about this than Brother Lawrence. Brother Lawrence was a lay brother, so he wasn't a monk or anything like that, in a Carmelite monastery in Paris in the 1600s. He was a dishwasher. He was a cook. Later on, when he couldn't manage to stand up as much, he fixed shoes. So he, you know, was someone who, I think, in some ways epitomized this idea of humility and meekness and gentleness. During his time doing all this, spending his life as this behind-the-scenes person in this monastery, he wrote down conversations, stuff that he said was written down, and it was all compiled in a book, Practicing the Presence of God. You can get it for like $2 on Amazon. You can find it somewhere free probably as well. Prayer for Brother Lawrence meant conversing with God throughout the tedious chores of the day. He says, every mundane task, whether peeling a potato, flipping an omelet, Didn't think they had omelets back then, but hey, who knows? Or washing the dishes was done, can be done for the love of God. You know, when you planted some annuals. Perennials would already be there. See, I'm a gardener. You know, did you do that sort of in this attitude of prayer? You know, like I love, like that's, you know, I don't have like those, you know, earphones, headphones. That's what they're called. Cool kids all have them. You know, because I kind of like silence. When I go bike riding, this week I got away for a couple days, went down to Crow's Nest and went over to Cranbrook and did a ride from Cranbrook to Kimberley and then went to a nice, neat natural hot springs and all that. I love the silence of riding. And it gives me time to pray, to think about things. I like driving, and sometimes I have the music turned real loud. Other times I have the music off. So we all can find this sort of idea in our own life. If you like gardening, if you like, you know, whatever you like to do, you know, to do it with this consciousness of prayer, that you can have this ongoing relationship with God. And it doesn't have to be fancy these and thou sort of language. It can just be your natural language. And sometimes you can just be aware of God's presence and you don't need to say anything. Brother Lawrence felt that anyone was capable of these ongoing conversations with God. He says a brief lifting of the heart was enough. He believed that short petitionary prayers, simple as they may be, were pleasing to God. You know, if you hear an ambulance, you know, shoot up a prayer for whatever emergency they're going to. When you see a situation which could maybe cause frustration, you know, maybe instead pray for the situation. You know, I think having this attitude of prayer can help God shape us and form us. You know, so that we can submit to God and yield to God. And prayer, I think, is key to that. And he also says, and I'll say this, because, you know, oh, you're going to leave here today and say, I'm going to practice the presence of God today, and then you'll get home and you'll play Call of Duty instead. Or that's what I might do. But, you know, he says that we must not get discouraged when we forget this holy practice. For all that is needed is to calmly take it up again. Once the habit is formed, we will find contentment in everything. So don't sweat it. If you get distracted, you know, when you're watching the Oilers game, pray for Bouchard. Pray for McDavid. You know, that's appropriate. You know? But, you know, like if you get distracted, if you try to set out and do it, don't worry. Just start it up again. But I think this is a practice that can teach us how to yield our ground and how God can build in meekness into our lives. And then, this is a little tougher, is that we need to continue with yielding your ground to others. In the day-to-day, in the real life, right? With your spouse, with your kids, with your neighbors, with your coworkers, with your schoolmates. We need to learn to submit and yield to others in love. They're not pushing our agendas. Maybe it's a good agenda, but like this is where it's tied to like being able to listen to others, to understand where they're coming from. You know, remember most of the passages that talk about proteis, this idea of gentleness or humility or meekness. When Paul uses it, he almost always talks about our interpersonal relationships with others. You know, we'll have conflicts. You know, whenever I do premarital counseling, I say, yeah, you're going to fight. but you need how to fight well. And by that, I don't mean fight so you learn how to win, right? But rather to you know, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And of course, here we once again can look at the example of Jesus, which Paul highlights as an example to us in Philippians, a passage that we spent some time on last fall. He says to the Philippians, "In humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationship with one another, have the same mindset of Jesus Christ." And then he goes on to describe the crucifixion, that Jesus gave himself up to the point of death, even death on a cross. So this morning, on this nice long weekend, as we go from here, enjoy your day off tomorrow, I invite you, you know, to recognize that Jesus is the one that defines what it means to be meek. And you see this throughout the Gospels. You see it described by, you know, himself as being meek and humble in heart. You know, that doesn't mean Jesus wasn't a doormat, right? He stood up sometimes to, you know, some of the other Jewish teachers and leaders of that day, but he also cared deeply and loved others deeply. And so we need to look to the example of Jesus. And I encourage all of us to yield our ground to God and accept the yoke of Jesus, for he is meek and humble in heart, and it's in him and in him alone that we find rest for our souls. Amen.